This is where we hold them! This is where we fight!
Now listening to Sweep the Rack Podcast featuring Brooklyn Rob and Big Mike.
Rob, what's good, homie?
Yo, what it do, nephew?
Oh, you don't sound good, bro.
Man, I'm feeling like crap, bro. I'm sick as a dog right now.
Powering through for the people.
Powering through. I woke up this morning feeling like ass, bro, and I think I caught some yesterday. I was out and about in Tempe area, and I was just hanging with some friends for a birthday party, and man, I woke up this morning, I'm like, man, I caught something. I knew it. So hopefully tomorrow I'll be able to go to work, but right now I'm feeling like ass. So
I power through for the people. Welcome to everybody in the chat. It's our second weekly episode here, and we're here strictly to break down the PBA action. Rob, there was a PBA title awarded on Friday night.
It was. I wasn't honestly a big fan of when they aired the finals. I understand, they have to, fit a schedule and whatnot. But that's, prime time, Friday, my time, 5 p.m. or 4 p.m. or whatever it was. I would like to see the finals get aired on Saturday afternoon. I think to me that's just a better airing time for finals, so I wasn't a big fan of that, honestly. But I was able to watch one of the matches, on my phone, literally just running errands, watching my phone and shit after work. I rewatched a couple of the final matches later, so it's cool. Bull TV, you could easily pull up the stepladder and watch it when you want,
or at least later at night, right? I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if Saturday is reasonable. I'll be honest with you. But I think that 7 o'clock Eastern is a little early if you're trying to get the largest viewing audience you can get. I think like 9 o'clock Eastern is probably a better time. If you're trying to attract as many people as you can. But I half-heartedly agree with your sentiment there. But PBA title awarded, and no spoiler alert here. I'm sure everybody who's listening to this tuned into the show, or at least by this point, has caught up on who won. And Anthony Simonson takes it down. 11th title, I believe, Ron?
Yeah, I kind of want to feel like I think we need to discuss. I think it's an interesting conversation maybe later on when we talk after we do our rundown and whatnot of right now who's the best bowler in the world. Because I think valid arguments between EJ and Simo, both parties have valid arguments on who the best bowler in the world right now is. Honestly, is that fair to say?
Yeah, absolutely. I think even if you go back 2 years, I think both can still make a strong argument, and I also think that, as we discussed a couple weeks back when EJ won for the second time, we kind of discussed the historical implications of that. I think that a similar conversation can be had, a hypothetical conversation anyway, can be had as far as Simo's concerned. 11 titles at 25 years old with a few majors under his belt already. It seems like anybody who's ahead of him in any statistical category is within reach.
There's such different players in the fact where when EJ has it, he completely runs away with qualifying and match play sometimes, where he'll lead by hundreds of pins. Simo is a different type of player. Simo is very versatile. He showed his versatility in the stepladder. He's able to play him completely different than everybody else. So would you rather be an EJ where when you have it, you're going to probably make a final match, or you're Simo where you're making consistently top tens and then you're just grinding it out? So it's just an interesting conversation because they're two different type of players Simo is definitely more versatile than Tackett is, but when Tackett has it, he, you know, strikes a lot more than Simo does. So interesting conversation, argument.
Wow. Hot takes in the chat by Robert Hamilton. He believes that the Belmo torch has been passed. Not saying that Belmo's going away, but there's a new king on the horizon. Oof, man. That's a bold claim, bro.
I mean, we knew it was going to happen. And I'm not saying, like, it's completely passed, because I think we're going to see Belmo this year, trust me. It's going to happen, and it'll be probably a major, which is usually when Belmo puts on his striking shoes, usually one of the big ones, the Masters or the TOC. But, like, dude, like, Simo is how old? What, 24? What's his – is that
25.
25?
Yeah. Man.
What he's doing right now is crazy. 25.
11 titles, 25. Few majors included in that. I mean, 25, you know. That's what I'm saying. Like, anybody who's ahead of him in any statistical category, whether it be earnings, titles, majors, all of these things, I think it's possible. You know, it's within the realm of possibility that he tracks them all down. You know, especially with the kind of start that he's had to his career.
I want to pull up Nico's comment because he's always, like, hot for some reason. He's always angry.
Love Nico.
Yeah. I don't know about that, Rob. Did you watch him at the U.S. Open? Jason didn't have his best performance. So you're going to criticize the best bowl in the world because he had one bad performance.
Yeah, especially it being the first tournament of the year. Yeah. You know, I'm almost willing to write that off. Yeah, see, Santu's 26, but Santu don't even have a single title yet. Simo's 25 and has 11 with a few majors under his belt. I mean, they're not even in the same stratosphere.
Not even
like if Santu ends his career, if Santu ends his career with Simo's resume right now, he'd be a Hall of Famer.
Yep.
Okay. So like that ain't even in the same category, man. But all right, let's you know, the people come for our rundown, Rob. That's why we're here. We're going to make it a quick show tonight, hopefully. And the people come for our rundown of the tournament. It was a great event. It was great. I'll be honest. Like, I couldn't watch much of the match play because, again, the timing, not the best. See, like, if you move the timing of the stepladder back, you can also move the timing of the match play back. And then you're going to get more people who are able to watch that second and final block of match play. Like, that was going on while I was commuting from work, and I get home, I got the kids to deal with. If you're on the West Coast like you, it's the middle of your work day, you know. So, I mean, unless you know, you're having such an easy day that you can sit back and just do nothing but watch bowling, it's tough. So, I didn't get to watch much of the match play this week. I really didn't. I wish I would have got to watch more, especially with Bill being in it and being in the hunt for most of it. But didn't get to watch much. But I'll tell you what, I was really excited to come home Friday night and get set up and get ready, get dinner and sit down and be like, all right, let's watch this stepladder.
I'm going to say, in my only criticism of their schedule and how they're bowling is, I really just wish they would use the weekends more. Like, essentially, Sunday is a perfect day for everybody, especially with the weather, how it is across the country right now. Like, it's just a good day, like, to sit back, like, stay home, like, cook dinner, watch bowling, right?
Yeah, but you're also talking about it being an internet broadcast, too. So, like, you know, I think if it's on live TV, then some of the things you're saying apply more fully. But I don't know. Yeah, but yeah, I agree with you, though, generally speaking. All right, let's start our rundown with running the ladder. All right, let's run the ladder here. And can I make this point before we run the ladder? And I said this on Twitter, and Tom Clark has a, you know, I'll say humorous response. Could be taken as a sarcastic response. I don't know. Probably. You guys can go on and read it yourselves. I just mentioned, you know, I asked, like, why, because it came up in the Bowl TV chat, too. So I went on Twitter and just asked Tom Clark, like, why four guys for a stepladder in an event where there's, like, no time restraints? No, you know, like, traditional, we're almost traditional format here with 12 games around robin match play. normally would be 2024, but whatever, you know, still traditional in the sense of the format. And then we're going to take four to the stepladder. Why not take five? There's no time constraints. Give us more of what we love, right? And, you know, he came back and made a joke about it being, oh, 17. Why not make it 17? And I made a joke back saying, yeah, that's what I'm saying. There's no time constraints. Why not make it 22, right? But, yeah, I would like to see the more traditional five-man stepladder. I wouldn't mind an extra match, you know.
There's another layer of that, Mike. There's another layer of that is I made a comment about the position round, right? Like, if you're only taking four bowlers, the fifth and sixth position round match
right.
is a little bit less important when you're only taking four, right?
Oh, yeah.
When you take an odd number, that number five and six match in the position round to get to the show is more entertaining to me to watch.
No? Well, to clarify that further, the reason that is because in the five-man show format, the two people bowling each other are really bowling each other to get on the show or not get on the show,
right?
Yeah. But in the four-man format, all four people that are bowling each other are on the show. You know, I mean, so technically, you can have a situation where three loses to four, right? But five doesn't beat six, and six doesn't make up enough ground to jump three, and everything remains the same, which is sort of what happened in this situation with Bill. Bill put up a huge game the last game, jumped a couple spots, and, you know, I believe just missed the show. Barnes, I think, was in a very similar situation as well. Like, who wouldn't want to see Barnes or Bill on this show? Like, add Barnes or Bill to the show. Are you telling me that makes it worse? It doesn't make it worse. So, you know, just an observation before we start. All right. First match was Buttriff against Santu.
Santu looked good, so good the first, like, game and a half. The one interesting thing about
game in seven frames.
Match was over. It wasn't even a match.
Buttriff only struck once in the first four frames.
Yeah, and Santu, like, had the look.
Shot 280. He shot 280. Buttriff only struck once in the first four frames, and it was pretty much over. Because Santu had it, and he wasn't missing. And, yeah, he ended up shooting 280. So, like, even when Buttriff found it later in the game and ended the game with a huge string, it was somewhat irrelevant.
I mean, and I talked to you a little bit about this before we went on air, that it, to me, was more entertaining when you had Santu throwing a new release motive ball. Just like it was with the new Black Venom, which looks pretty good. And any black ball history of a black ball always turns out to be a great ball for some reason.
Venom, just keep stamping that Venom on him. Motive.
Yeah, but then, like, yeah, and it looked really good, and he made it look really good this week. You know, going to give it the ammo, a lot of cannonballs to the Patch Pirates.
I'm considering motive for worst of the week on Thursday because they put out Patch Pirate porn by putting up a post about a mystery ball that was being thrown, a black mystery ball, and they had all the Patch Pirates for motive going crazy. And let's be clear, motive might have the worst roster of Patch Pirates I've seen. Okay, so I'm just saying.
Yeah, we'll have to wait for Thursday.
Thursday. Let's stick to topic.
Yeah, so, but stick to topic here is that, you know, I like to see the new releases getting thrown. And that was always my problem with watching Urethane getting thrown. I don't mind if you have four bowlers and two of them are throwing Urethane.
But the irony of you saying that is that the Purple Hammer's still there. You know, Buttriff is still there. You're still going to have, you know, the chorus of people who say, oh, Purple Hammer, Urethane, this guy doesn't belong there. But, you know, I mean, so you're still going to have that. So thoughts on that, even though what you're saying is true?
I mean, at this point, we have to be realistic with ourselves. Urethane's not going away. You know, I mean, maybe one day with all the testing that they do, they might, like, come in and say, yeah, like, we need more consistency in the testing, and they get rid of it. But for now, at this present date, the PBA Tour, we have to accept the fact that Urethane is going to be thrown. If you have a show, you have to also expect that there's going to be, you know, if you have four players, maybe at least half of them will be throwing Urethane. If it's a five man show, it doesn't surprise me any these days where three out of five, right? But for me, I like seeing a new ball game thrown, a new release, and it wasn't like a Venom shock. It was a new ball that you've never seen before. So like that was made it more appealing for me to watch.
And I'm another example of that later in the show too. And we discussed this all online. You brought this to my attention. Was Dom, and he was using the new Black Widow as well.
The 2.0, the hybrid, the red one, which looks great because, you know, he had four or five or something drilled or different ways. And to me, that's how you know a ball is good. Yeah. When you have a guy who's the caliber of Dom Barrett, who's one of the best players in the world, triple crown winner, all that, and he drills one ball out of, think about how many Brunswick new releases get released. I mean, they have, you know, nine new releases every 3 months, it feels like. And now you have him putting, you know, six of the same ball in his bag. It just shows you, like, you really, if you really want to drill balls and you really want to get an idea of what's good and what's not, really pay attention to what the highest level pros are throwing
and what's going down the lane a lot.
Mm-hmm.
If you see a ball going down the lane a lot, drill that ball because that's probably a good one.
And even like if the same ball is getting drilled seven different ways with five different surfaces,
right?
You know that ball's got it. And you don't see that a lot with certain bowling balls, but like I said, all these new releases, and you have Dom Barrett essentially having all these same ball in his bag, taking up all spots, and so you know it's a good one. So,
yeah, to me, no that's doubt. All right, so Santu wins against Buttriff, right? Santu moves on to bowl Dom. Santu up early against Dom, right? Dom kind of comes out struggling a little bit. I think he spared in two out of the first five frames.
He's going to nine too. He got a real.
He did, play. He did, but he had three strikes in the first five frames, and Santu comes out and only misses once in the first seven frames. Okay, yeah, through seven frames in this match, we had a match reminiscent of the Ozio Albee match. Okay, where it was, you know, not as good, but 279, 268 pace through seven frames in this match, okay? And then Santu gets up on the left lane. He gets up on the right lane in the seventh frame and throws a pretty good shot that goes somewhat light and smacks out the five pin, right? And then gets up on the left lane and throws what I thought looked like a pretty good shot, you know, for how he was playing them. And he's 7-10s. He's 7-10s in the eighth frame. And let's be honest, it completely changed the complexion of this match.
It's funny, like I feel like there's always a few shots during a TV stepladder where you could see the lane start to transition based on how the pins fall. And to me, that five pin of how Santu like mixed that five pin and it went down late was like the shot where all of a sudden you start to see the lanes transition, start carrying down. And then you slowly watch the transition. And then, you know, obviously we'll talk about the final match, but obviously that got Dom Barrett at the end. Yeah, I mean, it was a really good match. It was the best match of the show, obviously.
I mean, am I wrong that looked like one of those shots that you know should have been nine spare? It definitely shouldn't have been eight.
Look, if my aunt had balls, she'd be my uncle, Mike.
I mean, I'm just saying.
Complete what ifs. I mean, think about it. Bowling's not a fair sport.
I know. I hear you. I'm just saying, like that. That was just. It was tough. It was a tough way to see the momentum in that match change, and it did change, right? So he goes 8-8 open there, right? And Dom gets up and with a strike and a nine spare in response, Dom puts himself in a spot where he can't be shut out, right? He sits down through nine frames. No matter what Santu does, he can't be shut out. Santu's going through somewhat of a transition where he's probably going to have to make a move and do a little something to try and get the ball to strike. He gets up on the right lane. He goes nine spare, throws probably what was And even the announcer said they thought it was his worst and most inaccurate shot of the game. And then he gets up on the left lane, doubles, right? Seems like he doesn't really have much problem on that left lane for leaving the 7-10. But all Dom needed at that point was a mark. And you put somebody like Dom in a position where all he needs is a mark and it's over.
He's so good. And I every time I watch Dom Bauer bowl, I get so like just he's so solid. The way he's balanced, his fundamentals, just everything he does is so right. You know what I mean? And it's so fun to watch him bowl. But he's pretty good under pressure too. I mean, if he throws it, he normally throws it when he needs it. So he gets up, and throws a great shot online. No issues. Almost a 10 stood. But he kicked it out. And yeah, I mean, Santu 7-10 came to bit him in the ass. Really. I feel like that was Santu's match. Ultimately, though, and we'll talk a little bit after, though, I felt like that was Santu's tournament, that it slipped away for him in general.
One shot.
Well, I mean, yeah. And then
one shot. And listen, if he even gets 9 spare on that 7-10, I mean, I think the worst he does is tie. You know, I'd have to do the math on that. But, it was a tough way to see it end. But, you know, Santu with another stepladder, so –
okay, shout to him. Finals because this was
the final was over quicker than it started. Here's the thing we have to talk about before we talk about the final. And Tom Hess talked a lot about this in the booth, and you told me before we started this show that you wanted to talk about this, and I think this is the appropriate time to talk about it. The amount of practice for the entering player versus the returning player on the pair. So one thing that was being highlighted by Tom Hess and Mike Flanagan in the commentary of this was that basically I think I might have this somewhat wrong because this was Friday that I watched it, but I think they were saying Simo got to pretty much bowl a full game, like 10 frames, basically. Okay,
100%, that's what was
between
said.
Yeah, between the end of Dom's shots. Match, right? Between the end of Dom's match and the start of the championship match. And Dom gets no practice going into that championship match, right? And I got to say, like, I'm certainly not taking anything away from Simo in saying this. But just to comment on the perspective of the rule or the way that things are done, that's something that should really be up for discussion for change.
Well, not only is he get to throw 10 shots on that pair, he also is throwing a urethane ball. So obviously there's going to be some lane transition of he's just throwing urethane. And of course, what does Dom do when he gets up to start the match? He's literally, his ball is now going probably 2 to 3 feet longer at the break point than it was in the previous match. So, you know, Simo starts the match fireballing like 10, right? Great look, putting 10 to pit. Dom is going like, you know, 2-8-10. Then he's like light 10 pin. Then he goes another 2-8-10. And now he's got to literally make a ball switch in the middle of the game, which he made a pretty good ball switch. Even after the ball switch, he strikes. And then he comes again and comes light again. So, yes. Simo's practice with his urethane completely transitioned that pair in a negative way for Dom. And it definitely, in a short one-game match, that was the difference. I mean, Dom could never get his feet under him for the rest of the game.
Well, I mean, it was over. I mean, Simo was going to put up a ridiculous number with what he was doing. You know, what he was doing was clearly working. And, you know, with what he was doing, he was going to put up a high number. And Dom opened twice in the first 3 frames. And, you know, you're given a shark like Simonson blood in the water. And all he's going to do is just eat you alive. That's all he's going to do. You give a shark like him blood in the water, and that dude is straight going to eat you alive. And that's what Dom did. And that doesn't take anything away from Dom. I mean, he, like we just discussed with the practice, he's in sort of a tough situation to begin with. But yeah, you can't come out like that in a championship match against somebody like Simo, especially when he's playing him like that in a way where I felt at least that he was gonna have to throw somewhat of a really errant shot to find himself in some serious trouble.
Yeah. So Nico brings up a good point. Is this the way the strategy is for, you know, Simo getting 10 shots and Dom? Is that just an advantage of being the number one seed? Instead of them bowling a two-game match instead of Dom having to beat Simo twice, which is kind of sometimes how I feel it should be if you're the number one seed, is this just a way to give the number one seed an advantage for being the number one seed? I don't think that's
– Yeah, but in our current environment, I mean, with 10 shots, you can actually, like, purposely manipulate the lane if you really wanted to.
There you go. But
I know, but like that shouldn't be what the game's about. I feel like that's not in the spirit of the game, you know.
it's all sportsmanship, my man.
If you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. I know.
Could you imagine if Simo got up and literally like threw his 10 pin like 8 shots out of the 10 and threw 2 strike balls? I mean, could you imagine like what would the outburst or what would the feedback be from people if he was just throwing his plastic ball down the middle of the lane for 8 shots? I mean, ultimately, he could screw himself that way too if he's not careful, right, throwing a urethane. But the way his line was playing, you know, he had a better chance of screwing up Dom's shot than himself. But
right,
interesting conversation, though. It's a interesting 10-shot practice on a pair. I think that's a little bit crazy. Now, if they let Dom throw shots too,
how many?
I think like 5. I think if they gave him half,
I was going to say 4. I was going to say 4. Two frames worth of shots, right?
Yeah. So I'd be interested to see. Like, imagine if you gave Army Goldman 10 shots on a pair before he was getting up on a stepladder. He'd be throwing backup balls with like 100 grit, like on the left side if he was bowling a lefty. There's just so much sportsmanship you could do on a 10-shot like practice pair. It's actually an interesting, you know, debate that the PBA should think about maybe discussing if they really want a completely fair playing field for the like final match of these tournaments.
So, is there a bigger story here? Like, is the hot take in a situation like this where you see what Simo did versus what everybody else did in this tournament or in this final particularly, is the hot take here that technology in bowling is overrated?
You mean by technology like the performance bowling balls?
Yeah.
Overrated in what sense?
Overrated that people think that they're the answer to everything, but you have a guy, you know, go out and beat everybody using, you know, antiquated technology and, you know, doing it in a really simple fashion, I would say.
You could argue that the new urethane technology fits the game better today's than the high performance technology. The new urethane technology isn't an obsolete technology. Obviously, it's working. So, and the way it's obviously custom better. It's fit better for today's game than the high performance stuff. Now, I think a lot of the high performance balls obviously.
So new urethane is not old urethane.
Oh no!
Today's urethane is not technology. Yesterday's urethane.
Oh no!
Do you understand? Okay.
I had an old urethane ball, like, and I tried throwing it. It was a, like, I don't remember what it even was. And I mean, those old urethanes go straight. I mean, it's not even a close comparison to what the new urethanes are doing.
It's so weird. I'd like to get a ball chemist on here and talk about why that is.
There's a bunch of people I can get on.
It's somewhat wild.
Yeah.
But you know, true, I would imagine. Absolutely. But okay, you know, and listen, I'm not saying that that's my take. I want to be clear about that. That's not my take, but I'm just asking, like, is that the hot take to have when you see somebody like Simo do what he did this week? Now, it's funny that someone mentions this in the chat. Scott ST33 says, SPI Crispin can't be happy with his staffers using pitch blacks. I have on my notes here that I don't know who saw this or who didn't. I put out on Twitter like a little piece of the photo, and Steph is the guy who pointed it out to me originally. But Roto Grip sent out a thing about Simonson winning, okay? And in the thing that they sent out, they actually photoshopped a TNT over his pitch black. He's holding the pitch black after the. It's a picture of him after the tournament holding the pitch black. Wow. And they photoshopped a TNT, poorly photoshopped, by the way, because you could see the bottom of the pitch black in the photo. So poorly photoshopped as well. A TNT on top of the pitch black. Okay. And yes, they did. Kevin Weeks in the chat is saying, no, they didn't. You can go to the Roto Grip Facebook page and you can look that up. Okay. You can go to my Twitter account too.
I'm going.
Yeah. Listen, if you want to pull it up, but you can go to my Twitter account too. And I actually zoomed, I edited the photo to zoom in on the Photoshop. Okay. Yeah. So, you know, Jeff is in, your brother is in the chat saying, they don't care, but I don't know, Jeff. Like, if they're photoshopping the brand new ball that just came out over the pitch black that he won with, do they care or do they not care? I think they do care. You know?
Oh wait, I got it. Let's see if I can pull. I'm gonna pull this up real quick. I think this is the picture you were talking about.
Yeah, that's it. Go to the, now. If there's a way you can zoom in on the actual picture, you'll see at the bottom of the picture that the black of the pitch black is sticking out underneath the ball.
Right, yep. There, you mean, right?
Yeah. You can see it a little bit already. Zoom in a little more. There you go. Now you can really see it. Zoom in a little more. Yep. That's you go.
That's right here, right?
Yep.
Dude, how funny is that? So here's my my take on it. Is that
and real quick, Jeff's making a point that he did use the TNT a lot during qualifying. I know I watched a lot of qualifying and he did use it a lot, but still, I mean, I don't know. Like, to me, that says we want to sell TNTs. I mean, is that a wrong conclusion for me to reach from that? Come on, Jeff, you're a lawyer. You don't reach that same conclusion. You graduated from Stuyvesant. Come on.
Photogate. So my observation here is I would really like to know what the percentage of sales are on a bowling ball when a pro uses it on TV, like a new release. And I'm not talking about the streaming finals, right? I mean, yeah, there's still a little bit of probably. But when a pro makes –
You want to see if it – takes off after a ball is on TV and a guy
because they give incentives to the pros to use them on TV. So there's obviously some kind of monetary, percentage for when a pro uses a high performance ball on a TV. So I would really like to know those numbers. And obviously I probably already know the answer without having to see those numbers, you know, just based on compensation on incentives, which a lot of the companies aren't doing these days. At least I know Brunswick, their incentive, I don't think they even have an incentive for their high staffing pros anymore. I think Storm always has some kind of incentive. But when you have a guy like Simonson who probably wants to win rather than use a high performance and make some incentive money, they have to weigh the balance. But it ain't like it used to be, Mike. And I know Charlie Tapp is, I think, in the chat. And I'm sure he could talk to some of the really big incentive deals that were, you know, given out back in the like 80s, right? And even before that, where they used to have a list in the paddock of if you threw this ball on TV, you get paid this amount of money. And you know, at that point, I mean, even today, it was some pretty big incentives. So
I think that tells you that at least one time or for one period of time, there was probably a strong belief amongst the bowling ball companies that you having a ball used on TV was going to sell that ball.
Oh, there's definitely a correlation between sales and a new ball getting thrown. And just as a consumer, how many times, Mike, and we talked about this, how many times did I see a new release getting thrown on TV and I literally mid-match called a pro shop and ordered it?
I know. I hear you. I hear you. I mean, I would think that it's probably pretty significant based on, you know, if you think how you think when you see new balls on TV, or how I would think, or how younger people think when they see new balls on TV. Yeah, I think that, you know, one of the best things about watching bowling on a Saturday afternoon was not knowing what new balls you were going to see on that show and being like, oh my God, what ball is that? And like by the end of the show, somehow you would figure out what ball they'd either say it or
I'd be calling people.
You know, you'd be calling people, right? You know,
I'd be on my landline.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And then if you didn't find out by Saturday afternoon when you showed up at the JBT on Sunday, that John and Mark Halliday were guaranteed to have that ball. So you could just go up to them with their 16 ball donkey roller and be like, hey, John, what was that ball that that Johnny Petraglia was throwing on TV yesterday? And he would pull it right out of his 16 ball donkey roller and be like, oh, it was the Fire Quantum. It's right here. I have one. It's a great ball.
So great. I love it. I remember
If you didn't get that, I'm sorry. Sometimes we have to journey down roads that not everybody's familiar with here.
I remember I had my black book and I would just go through like the landlines. I'd be like calling Bill, like Ryan Snyder. Like it was just like all my list. And I'd be like, yo, what balls he throwing? Do you know? They'd be like, no, I don't. Like if we weren't bowling, like if we were home essentially. But most of the time we watched a lot of those shows in the bowling alley bowling.
Yeah, so I wouldn't be surprised if you know it does have an impact. But
all right.
So two things I want to talk about here quickly before we do the rest of our rundown. Simo's versatility. I think Nico brought it up in the chat earlier. Simo's versatility, right? Like he's definitely the most versatile player on tour.
And he's a two-hander, which makes it even wild. Like
I know. Crazy. I know he can do so many different things, and his thought process out there as to how to get the job done is different but effective.
This kid's got balls of steel. He's not afraid to do shit. He's not afraid to try shit. He's not afraid to like do.
Well, he's not afraid to commit to it, though, is the thing. Like trying it is one thing, but saying no, I'm gonna do this and stick to it and make it work is a completely different thing.
It's a confidence level that not a lot of people have, essentially. The confidence in his own ability to do things and different things is what separates him from a lot of other people on tour.
Yeah, it's, you know, who, so like before Simo, who would be the most versatile player
Norm,
on tour?
Norm Duke.
Okay.
No hesitation.
Is Bill in that conversation as well?
Yes.
I feel like he is, right? I feel like Bill Barnes, is pretty versatile. Barnes, I would say yes as well. Would you put Belmo in that conversation?
Yeah, he has to be for all the tournaments he's won.
I'll be honest.
I
mean,
I would put him above like Norm. Of how versatile Norm was, to me, I've
Prather, definitely. Prather
is versatile, but nobody was Prather better than definitely. Norm.
Prather probably is right behind Simo. Kevin Weeks, that's a great point. That's a great point in the chat. Definitely impressive versatility from Simo. Impressive thinking out there. You know, just generally an impressive win, impressive bowling all week, really. You know, he's you're right. You don't often see him dominate from wire to wire like Tackett does occasionally. But, man, he was just hanging around the top of the standings all week. All right, second thing, and then we'll get to the rest of our rundown here and give our category winners. Simo's climbing the ladder of history at a very young age, man.
Yeah,
it really is. Like when you look at the other people that have 11 titles, okay, like you know you're talking pretty rarefied air.
So let me ask you on that point: do you think the domination of Belmo the last like 5 years has taken away some of that shine from Simo?
No. Well, yes, yes. The obvious answer is yes to that. How could you say no, right? Because the number one guy is the number one guy, and that's that. And let's be clear, Belmo has been the number one guy, right? But I'm going to say no in the sense that he's so young. Like, comparing him and Belmo, it isn't even fair. It isn't even a fair comparison because Belmo is so further along in his career than Simo is. I mean, Simonson is like really at the infancy beginning stage of his career, Rob. He has 11 freaking titles and he's literally like at the beginning. There's a lot of guys out there right now that didn't even win a title until they were older than 25.
I think it's Simo is going to be what's going to really separate him the next 10 years or, you know, maybe work against him is his mental game. If Simonson can like not be his own worst enemy, which he's not right now, obviously he's winning and he's making shows. And I don't think that's the case, but he's going to get more mature and he's going to even get more experience. And he's going to, in between his versatility and how physically gifted that kid is, you know, he has a possibility, the chance to really go down as the greatest bowler of all time at this age. Like, he's really on that path right now. You know, the way he's starting this year off and what he's done in his young career, I mean, that's safe to say, really is.
Let me for a second read you some of the names. Simonson has 11 titles, right? Here's some of the names of the people that have 10 titles. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Wes Mallott.
Wow.
Doug Kent. Huh. Steve Hoskins. Brian Goble. Are you ready for this name? Dom Barrett. Okay. Yeah, Simonson has more titles already than Dom Barrett has in his career. Okay. Here's name one recognizable name with 11, right? David Ozio. Okay. 12. Jesper, probably another name we don't talk enough about in terms of, you know, him climbing this historical ladder. Danny Wiseman, 12.
Oh, these are legends, okay. Dude. These
13, are legends. 13 titles. Simo's two titles away from this group. Are you ready? Randy Peterson, this is 13 titles. Randy Peterson, Bill O'Neill, Del Ballard, Patrick Allen. He's two titles away from that, son, and he's 25 years old.
That's crazy.
I mean, man. Now where I saw a comment from somebody there about EJ Tackett. How many total titles does EJ Tackett have?
I think he's around.
Let's see.
My guess would be like around that area, 14.
I don't see him on this list.
Maybe he's less than that. No, not 18. I don't think he's got that many.
He has 18.
No.
Oh, look. Yeah, he does. 18. Okay. 18 titles. So seven more titles over the next 5 years for Simonson to be on pace with Tackett. Right? I mean, I think that's more than doable.
Well, dude, I mean,
it's more than doable.
I think it's you got a chance of like guys like EJ and Simo both like beating the title like record, honestly. You know,
I think Simo has a better shot at that because
he's younger,
more consistent. You know, he's probably going to have more chances on shows because of that consistency. Where EJ, you know, with the inconsistency, you know, you're going to have to take advantage of like every show you make. Whereas Simo, when it's all said and done, is probably going to might have more TV appearances than anybody. When it's all said and done, that's another record he could possibly assault. So
interesting
man. Interesting. You know, I love, listen, I'm sorry if anybody's bored by this. I'm a bowling historian. Like, I love to talk about the history of the game and who fits in where. And, you know, it's really interesting to me. And I've thought in the last couple of days, I thought a lot about, you know, Simonson and where he's at. Okay.
Hey, Kevin, real quick, I like to pull up this comment because it's a good point. Biggest question about two-handers is the longevity. The way they throw the ball takes a physical toll. Will they still be able to throw it like that in their 40s? we've talked about this before on the show. It's still unanswered because, you know, we're still in that, like, Belmo is starting to get into that, like, 40-year-old range. And to me, he's probably the one that's going to – I guess we're going to find out if you're able to bowl in your 40s. I think it is possible. I think that when you bowl two-handed, you do use a lot of legs as a two-hander. So I think the only thing issue I could see with being two-handed is your back. I could see back problems, the way they just have to throw, you know, that awkward back, the way they bend over and whatnot. And then, you know, I think they'll have problems like any other bowler that does. These guys bowl so many games a week, Mike. You're going to have physical problems. The question is it going to be major physical problems or just like, you know, just like little minor issues that, you know, a lot of the pros deal with. I mean, look at Praver. Like Praver is dealing with a big wrist injury right now. And he's
Rash has a back issue going on.
Rash has a back
issue. Wes Malott is hurt. He hasn't bowled the last event or two.
Yeah. So anyway, I think it's a good point, but I think it's uncertain.
This is a good point too. Brett Fancher in the chat brings up Simo bends over a lot more. Right. He does, but he's also shorter, which I think people don't consider. Like, he's low to the ground to begin with already. So I don't know. It is an interesting question though.
But Matt Walter says Walter is 100 and he's throwing it two-handed. I'm sure he'd argue with you about being 100. But the key to that is Walter didn't throw two-handed his whole career. Walter didn't start bowling two-handed like until like the last couple of years. The majority, if not 98% of his career, he bowled one-handed. So anyway, yeah. So all right, Mike. Let's get through the rundown here.
All right, let's do it. Let's start with I See You, Hoss.
Cool. Do you want to go first, or you want me to go?
Yeah, I'm gonna give it to somebody who didn't make the show, didn't finish that high, so to speak, in the standings. But David Bo Kroll, you know, like I See You, Hoss. Anytime this guy comes out and bowls a tour event, he seems to really impress. He seems to make a run. He was leading at one point this week. He threw like 31 in a row. You know, he's all over my social media feed. I See You, Hoss. Boog. See You, Hoss.
My I See You, Hoss goes to Santu.
No doubt.
Santu was literally going to win. I thought he was going to win this tournament, and he was one of my picks midway through the tournament that I just had a gut feeling that Santu was going to make a run because I feel like he's on that right now brink of really starting to get comfortable out there and starting to really like see how good he is. So yeah, Santu, you know, you kind of let the tournament slip a little bit, but man, what a great run. And I kind of feel like we're going to see him win a title this year.
Man, how good were you feeling if you had money on Santu before that eighth frame?
Man,
I mean,
I know.
I would have been feeling really confident.
Yeah, I mean, he was plus like 1,100 or 1,300 like mid tournament.
But so that's why bowling's a great sport, because one shot can just change it. One shot can change the whole complexion of everything. All right, let's go dumpster diving gold medal. Who you got?
Oh, I think you know who I'm going with.
I kind of feel like I do, but I hope it's not. Go ahead.
Sorry, Haas. Ryan Simonelli, you get dumpster diving.
I knew it. I knew you were going to do it.
Hey.
The
first thing I do is scan the bottom of the, you know, bottom of the standings, Mike.
And I hope he's okay physically.
Oh, is that what happened? That. Was he
I don't know. I have no idea. I have no clue.
Let me make it clear here. If he was injured and he didn't bowl, you know, or miss games or DNF, he didn't DNF because I checked that before I give the dumpster diving. But if he was hurt in any way, I will refute my dumpster diving gold
he
medal.
He did DNF.
Oh, he did.
He withdrew. I think somebody who withdrew is still eligible for dumpster diving gold medal, though.
Well, not if he's injured, I think.
I don't know if he was injured. I don't know. I mean, I'll be honest, like, I watched him bowl a lot because he was bowling on Bill's pair, or around Bill's pair. Might have been on Bill's pair. And I don't know, man. It seemed like he was out there kind of just like going through the motions.
See, I looked at the standings, Mike, and I'm looking at him right now. And there isn't a WD next to his name. Now,
But that's because the PBA website is terrible, and you have to go to a different place to get the actual final standings.
Brett Fancher says he gave up.
He did, yeah. Okay, so, all right.
That's a complete – you get two gold medals, dumpster diving, okay, for giving up.
My dumpster diving gold medal now, Nico in the chat mentioned Chris Vi.
Yeah,
I heard in the broadcast at some point that he might be dealing with an injury, and that's why he wasn't performing well. So I'm going to pass that one up, even though I recognize that too. And I'm going to go with Nick Pate. Nick Pate lurking at the bottom of the standings. Dumpster diving gold medal. Got to give it to him.
All right, so
Give it to Kyle Sherman.
Yeah, I was going
to
say,
Lumber Factual saying Kyle Sherman can't give it to Kyle Sherman. Why? Kyle Sherman he's coming off of an injury. It's the first tournament of the year. He bowled, so you know, come on, we're reasonable here at Dumpster Diving Gold Medal. You know, you got to be fully in it to be eligible for that. All right, let's go, Milk Carton. Milk Carton, to be clear, is a guy who has been quote unquote missing. They've been on the milk carton. Now they're back around. We saw them. Oh, it's like they're not missing anymore. Take them off the milk carton. Okay. Who do you got?
Christian Ascona.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one.
My guy's been in top three dumpster diving for the past two tournaments.
That's a good one.
So good to see Christian Ascona. He finished 13th place. So he found a way to make the top 22. So, you know, we've been hard on our guy. He was on our show. Great guy, Christian. We've been hard on him, but
we have
got to give credit. Credit's due, you know.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt.
Robert David to Bill.
I don't know about that. Bill's been bowling pretty good, man. Bill's been lurking at the top of the standings. He hasn't been missing. I'm gonna go Josh Blanchard.
Perfect.
I'm gonna go Josh Blanchard. Bill Carton. I mean, retired. Regional director,
holds my league.
All of a sudden, he shows up Wichita Open, his old stomping grounds.
Yep,
he hasn't been around. Where you been, Josh? Haven't been bowling up. Here I am, Wichita Open, North Rock. I'm back. I'm not missing anymore. Take me off the milk cart, and I'm getting a check. I'm getting a check too. So shout to him, milk cart to Josh Blanchard.
Now he's got to go wake up call back to reality when he bowls Tuesday nights at Bolero.
Yeah, David Tolson in the chat says D Tang. That's another good one. I had D Tang on my list as well, but I decided to go with Blanchard. All right, let's go. This was a tough one this week because I didn't feel like there was a lot of significant spare shenanigans, but we'll go spare shootah.
Oh man,
I thought this was easy. I thought this was so easy. It's Stu Williams. I mean, he made the 7-10 once. He almost made it twice. He almost did it twice. I'm going to give him spare shootah for his 7-10.
Yeah, I would probably give it to Stu also. I didn't really have anybody for this because I normally look to see spares that were missed on the show. I think that's usually my how
there weren't any.
And I didn't watch enough qualifying and match play to see if there was any really significant spares missed in the position round or whatnot. So I'm going to pass on this week for spare shooter.
Okay. All right. No spare shooter award for Rob. All right. We're going to last category. We're going to go ride with, not ride with. Not ride with. I'm going to go Michael Tang. I'm not riding with Michael Tang because he got beat by a regional director for the check, for the last check. A retired regional director snuck you out for the last check, son. Like, I don't want to ride home with him after finishing this little mini swing. I don't want to ride home with Michael Tang after the regional director just snuck me out for a check.
Mm. Yeah, I don't want to. I'm not riding with Chris Vi.
Okay.
They're
actually probably riding together because they own a pro shop together and whatnot. So that's a good pick by us. We're just avoiding that car in total.
He's been, you know, probably so far having a pretty disappointing year. So I wouldn't ride with him. Who am I riding with this week, Mike? I'm riding with the Beef and Barnsley show this week, Mike.
Okay.
I'd like to be in that car because Barnes, sixth place, made a great run. good, whose I think birthday was yesterday. So happy birthday to Chris Barnes, getting up there in age, well as my brother. Yeah,
the doctor.
Yeah, I think they actually might have the same birthday. So happy birthday, my brother Jeff and Chris Barnes. And Stu is, you know, having a good year so far, a pretty solid year, I think. You know, I think he's going to break through eventually here. But he's been, you know, hovering around the cuts. He's been, you know, up there making it. So I think so far it's been a pretty good showing for Beef and Barnsley.
I had two thoughts about ride with. My first thought was I want to ride with Bill, Tommy, and DJ.
That's such a great car ride.
Isn't it? That might be my choice every week that any one of them bowls good. It's going to be fun conversation. It's probably going to be good music, at least bearable music.
No bowling talk.
There's probably going to be a lot of bowling talk, but it's probably going to be all like high-level comical bowling talk, which I'm all about. I mean, put me right in there. You're probably going to eat well. You know, those guys aren't stopping at McDonald's to eat. They ain't getting the sushi from the gas station. Okay, they know better than this. These are journeyman veteran out there. Okay,
yeah, I was gonna say shot it wrote. Make sure the DraftKings count is in good standing because you know the bets are gonna be flowing. Do you remember a ride where Belmo took with Tony Lacaze and Belmo was live tweeting Tony Lacaze's conversations? Might have been the greatest Twitter like moment of Belmo's career, in my opinion.
Tony Lacaze would measure rides in how many blunts he would smoke on the ride. When I would ask him how long was the ride, he'd be like, five blunts. I'm like, what?
Dude, so I would love to hear the DJ Archer, Tommy Joe, because I've like lived in the house with them during the like World Series of Bowling. So I have an idea of like the conversations that are being had with these guys and the betting and you know, and it's, dude, it's hilarious. Like, and I asked Bill Bill told me like he was like riding with them. I was like, dude, that's gotta be super entertaining. Like, he's like, yo, it is nonstop hilarious. Like it's just hilariously funny. So,
plus yeah. Like they play poker. So we're probably going to stop at a casino or two on the way.
DJ
like,
Archer is super bulky, hilarious though. I don't know if you've ever had a chance to talk with him, like just like bullshit with him. Yo, my guy is literally hilarious. Like if anybody's ever got to talk to him.
Tony Lacaze bowling again in the Chicagoland area. Nice. Still hilarious as always. Let me tell you something. Tony Lacaze is my guy. Okay. Yo,
both our guys, man.
Yeah. Tell Tony Lacaze to reach out. Like he's at the top of our list for guests we want to have on this show. All right. So if you know him, make him aware of this show and tell him we need him on here. That is our guy around here. Okay.
He won't respond to my texts, even though he's like my guy. I mean, I went to college with him. Like, I can't even get responses out of him. I drove down when I lived in Chicago, though. I drove down to his league to go visit him a couple years back.
So my other ride with, and I think we used this one already this year, would be Santu and Tommy Keiko. I'm riding with those two. I mean, they got to be feeling good, man. Both made a show, good finishes, going well. You know, they're over in America trying to do their thing. It's working out. Seems like it's working out. So,
all right.
Love it. Okay. Love it. But, cool. All right, guys. That's it. Man. We gave you our rundown. We reviewed the PBA tournament. Another title handed out. I think we covered everything that we need to cover. Last thought that we want to give here, Rob. Final thought from both of us is about Bet Rivers. Yes. Unofficial, official sponsors of Sweep the Rack. And I want to be clear, we don't have a sponsor. They're not sponsoring us. But we found out that there's an online casino out there that is offering betting on bowling. Okay. I reached out to them about why it wasn't available in New Jersey. Apparently it has to do with some state laws, but it is available in other states. So if gambling is legal in your state, check it out. Bet Rivers, you can go on there. You can bet PBA futures right now is the only thing you can bet, but I've already reached out to them, and I have an ongoing conversation with them on Twitter. Like they're very responsive to all the information that I'm giving them, and they're telling me that going forward, there's likely going to be more betting options available for PBA events. So right now you can only bet futures, like who's going to win, who's going to finish first and second. Okay, but going forward, there might be more betting opportunities. So if betting is legal in your state and you can download BetRivers, if that's available in your state, you can check on your own. You probably just go to BetRivers website and check it out. But, yeah, Rob, and here's the thing, folks. Rob's in Arizona, and it's available in Arizona. So the Corp is back in business, okay?
You have all the betting corners is back of in the world business. Cornered out here.
And let me tell you, people will love this. Let me tell you what happened this week. We were waiting for Rob's account to get cleared, right? He had to send in his information, his ID, and they got to clear. Yeah, there's true. A little bit of a process, so be prepared for that, right? Do it this week and get set up for the tournament. It takes 72
hours to be verified.
Right? So Rob sends in all his stuff. It doesn't get verified before the tournament starts. So we missed the opportunity to bet right in the beginning of the tournament. Then it gets verified like right in the middle of the tournament, pretty much, right when match play was starting. Okay. So I put in a bet of $20 each on Bill and Prather. Okay. And what happens? They both get black clouded to death. Bill goes from second to out of the show. And Prather misses the show by like a hit, pretty much.
So okay. What I didn't tell Mike is that I put a bet in for $10 on Belmonte, a +800.
Okay.
And he was super, super close to making that show.
Yeah.
And I was just like, dude, for the love of God, just get him on that show. And we all know what Belmo could do when he makes the show on a 2 or 3 game ladder. So it made it a lot more fun for me, and it made it even more painful for me that I couldn't watch like the match play because I was working Friday, and I'm not about to lose my job trying to watch streaming bowling on a Friday for my like work. But yeah, I love that because you could. I'm going to be hitting a lot of those like +1300, like the +1700, like
oh, some of them are really high, and I mean there's some real.
I don't think there's a lot of cap, at least.
Like Boog Kroll at the beginning of the week this week was some like insane number, and I thought to myself like, man, if I could get a bet and this guy has made runs in PBA events before, like I would definitely throw $10 on him, you know, just to have something on there. So
yeah, I might, maybe I'll start a bowling brokerage. She's like, Shannon's like, I'll take all the winnings, like cut out the winnings. Maybe I'll start a brokerage. If you want to bet bowling, come through me. Pump it up 10%, you know, and then, yeah.
Robert Hamilton saying he needs to hear our opinion about the Patch Pirate post about the top 5 balls of SBI.
Oh, yeah, a Storm. No, it was a
SPI, a I guess he means.
No, it was a Bowler's Mart post where they just put up a post asking what the top 5, like, balls were ever made. And then I put on the Facebook, like, Patch Pirates Assemble, like,
okay. You know, hey, how about Bowler's Mart commenting on the Patch Pirates earlier this week? The Patch Pirate thing is spreading, bro. It's spreading. You know, hopefully we get the goat, we get the female goat on to talk about it on Thursday. You know, I'd love to do that for the people. I'm ready to give an official definition of the Patch Pirate. So. Listen, we had fun tonight. We always enjoy chopping it up over the action. This is why I enjoy doing this podcast, analyzing the action that goes on. I feel like, Rob, this is one of the few places you can get this type of content where there's going to be honest, deep analyzation of not only the action but also the implications of the results, right? And some of the other things into here.
I think Nico's a download patch pirate. Rob, you can't hate on him. He's got a lot of subs.
Nico, I'm a hate on him all day, every day, bro.
I don't hate my hates on him. I don't. I like Lewis.
All day, every day. Okay. We do need to hire a lawyer. Jeff, can you get this done for us? We'll pay you, bro. Can you get this done? Trademark it for us, please.
Jeff, he's
or get somebody in your law firm. Tell us how much. We want to get that done.
Maybe if we have some like bankruptcy that he's got to go after, but yeah. Oh, he says he's gonna look into it. I like it. Patch Pirate gear coming your way. I saw a shirt someone made, a Patch Pirate shirt.
Yeah, it was Luke Rossdale.
Yeah.
Yeah. We should get royalties on that too if he's selling them. Luke, if you're selling those, I want my money, bro. I want my money. Okay. All right. Just saying. Let me go. All right, guys. We always enjoy. Follow us on social media. I'm at 215th. He's at Brooklyn Rob 11. There's no bowling this week. So we might be down just to one show, perhaps. You know, we'll pick it back.
Do a show this Sunday.
Yeah, we'll pick it back up again after the action resumes. Yeah.
So we'll be back Thursday to talk this week, just in general about what's going on. But we're not gonna show Sunday. It makes no sense.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, unless I have the schedule wrong, and there's gonna be some.
Unless Mike goes 800 in his sport league, that's the only way.
We'll
be on Thursday to talk about it anyway. So
that'd be great. Yeah, but all right, guys, take it easy. Have a good couple days, and we'll see you back here on Thursday.
Peace.
You are now listening to Sweep the Rack Podcast featuring Brooklyn Rob and Big Mike.